Hey there! Pull up a chair next to Dee Fish, speaker, author, business coach, basically all-around professional talker. As he spends a few minutes chatting with some of today's top entrepreneurs, writers, artists, salespeople, and executives, they might discuss their favorite craft brews, or the cutting edge of business technology, or what's playing on their headphones. Who knows where the conversation will take them? So, grab a glass and join us for beer, beats, and business.
Every morning, you know, just remember that when you wake up, it's a new day. And that day is an unwritten book, you know, unwritten page in a book, and you get to write it. Just keep that in mind when you're slogging through that, you know, it might be a tough day, but the next day is new, it's been unwritten, and you have the opportunity to make it great.
That was Mike Dwyer. Mike is an expert in the overlap of technology and attracting and retaining talent. He's also a fixture in the improv scene here in Chicago. My name is David J.P. Fisher, but nobody calls me that. Everyone just calls me D. Fish. I'm an author, speaker, and business coach, but most importantly, I'm going to be your host today on Beer, Beats, and Business. Mike, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic, D. Fish. How are you?
You know, I am, as I always say, living the dream because I'm upright.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know what? There's a lot of people who have been denied the privilege, so I'm doing awesome.
Yeah, my tagline is I'm just one man trying to make it in America. That's what I always say when people ask me how I'm doing. So,
and you're in there, you're in the grind, man, trying to make
just
it happen.
Grind, just hustling.
I love it. So here's our start off question: what has been the best lesson that you have applied to the startup world from your experiences in the improv acting world?
I feel like I'm on a game show, and that if I answer that in the right way, that I'm going to win some kind of a prize.
Well, you're already getting my love, so I don't know what else you could ever want.
Plenty. That is plenty for me. You know, I would say that improv is all about it. When you watch an improv show, it appears that that it's been well thought out or that it's been scripted, and that comes from you and the team of improvisers that you're on stage with. Performing together over a certain amount of time, practicing, and working on stage using rules that have been developed 40, 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And people, they don't know that. And so you come up on stage, you ask for a suggestion, and everyone starts performing a 25-minute show based on that suggestion. And people are always like, if it's done well, they're like, oh, my God, it looks like that was scripted. How could that be scripted when we just gave them the suggestion? And so, I think that with improv and how it relates to the startup world is that, you have to be prepared and develop an infrastructure and rules, to be successful, as a technology company that's going through a lot of growth in a short amount of time. And part of that is when you're hiring a lot of people and you're in the talent or people leadership role, you have to develop core values for the organization that are like the foundation for what the company believes in, and that needs to be passed down to the employees so that as they're doing their day-to-day work, which changes on the dime,
right,
that they're prepared to be successful in what they do, but always kind of be grounded in what the core values are, and ultimately that will create an organic culture. And so I think that the comparison with improv is that you do have to plan and practice and be prepared and have a foundation, but you also are going off fly and you are doing multiple things. You're not just doing one type of a duty like you would in a larger organization. You're wearing multiple hats. You have to be prepared for anything, but you always go back and lean on what that core values and that culture is that you've developed.
Well, I like that comparison of creating some rules that are almost the litmus test, right? Where you go, okay, what do we do in this situation? Well, let's go back to the core number, the core idea that we're really working from. How long have you been doing improv, by the way?
Oh, God.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. I'd say probably 20 years.
Okay. So you're getting the hang of it.
You've got to love me. I've actually, not everybody knows this, but I used to do improv, but just like comedy sports. I did, you know, theater sports, that more kind of short form work.
Right.
But, you know, one of the things that always stood out to me was just what you said, that idea of rules. And it's funny how just having a few rules can allow you to create a scene, whether it's 2 minutes or 20 minutes. Like one that I always liked was yes and, right? Yeah. Like you can't, and people always, I think, mock it when they don't understand what you're really doing with that. Mm-hmm. But just the idea that you can't deny somebody else's reality, but rather you have to build upon it. And so when you're talking there, I'm just thinking, like, what would happen in a startup if instead of, you know, if people had an idea, instead of just going, no, that wouldn't work, go, okay, yes. Now, how do we make it work? Right.
I love it. Yeah. No, and I have done workshops in the startups that I've worked in. I've written blogs over the years about this when it comes to brainstorming and thought development around, even if you're working in a marketing department or, you know, looking at marketing a product or service. And it's all about agreement. Like, there's no bad idea. And then building off of that idea. And what yes and actually is the primary tenet of all improv, really.
Okay.
And it's the basis of, you know, approaching something in a positive manner, collaborating with others. And so you can take that kind of construct and put it into a lot of different, areas of business.
Yeah, I love it. And kind of even to piggyback on that, I also think people, especially in the business world, hear that and go, well, yeah, but not everything works. I also think that when you have these rules, and to your point about having these rules in the business, like yes and, also I think it gives a lot of responsibility to the person who is coming up with the idea, because they're knowing, hey, the person who I'm working with in a scene, let's say, they're going to agree with me. So I can't screw them over by giving them like a horrible suggestion, right? Because they're going to yes and it, and then we're going to go nowhere. So in the same way, taking your business and going, okay, if I know that everybody's going to support me, that doesn't mean that we're going to actually do what I, you know, every idea I bring to the business. But I've got to really make sure that I am thinking for the other people in the, right? Yeah. I'm supporting them at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, I love when you brought up the yes and component of it too, because that is just something that I talk about a lot, and it just goes to show, D-Fish, how aligned the two of us are. I mean, we are having a Vulcan mind meld right now through the interwebs.
I love it. Well, that's the joy of beer. So I don't know if you're joining me today, but I am drinking Fuel Cafe. It's a coffee stout from Lakefront Brewery in Milwaukee. I had to represent for my hometown today. So it's I know you like a little lighter and hoppier, but this is dark and coffee-ish, and it's tasty.
I know you like that. Yeah, I'm drinking. I am having a beer right now, and I'm drinking a Five Rabbits Golden Ale, which I think...
Oh, one of your favorites.
Is one of my favorites, next to, of course, what's that, the brewery just in the south of just north of Illinois there, Spotted Cow.
Oh, yeah, New Glarus.
New Glarus. But this Five Rabbits Golden Ale, man, this stuff is just heaven's milk.
Well, and it's a good Chicago brewery, too, so...
Yeah,
that always helps. I like, they have a great porter called Gringolandia. I might not be pronouncing that right, but
I've had it. Yeah,
so they make some good stuff. Well, all right. So getting back to startups. So you've spent a lot of your time really focused on recruiting, obviously, and not just recruiting and bringing people into startups, but also the idea of retention, about developing people. You know, even I can imagine the last 10 years, that world has changed so much because of technology. Yeah. What have been some of the biggest impacts that you've seen of technology on this idea of, and let's keep it in startups, the idea that you can have a small business that all of a sudden goes from five guys and gals to 100 in, or even more. Like, what's been the biggest impact technology has had on that?
I think that there's a couple I can think of. One is the fact that you have, you know, website, you know, you have, you know, online communities like LinkedIn, you know, sites like Stack Overflow for engineers. And they're really kind of democratizing the ability to find great talent out there. GitHub, which is an open source tool for building software. I think that you ultimately see like small companies, they either you had to post a job in the newspaper, or you had to go through a staffing firm where you were paying $30,000 to $50,000 per hire to find the right types of folks. And I think that with the ability to kind of connect with people, network through these types of platforms, I think has really kind of impacted the growth of a startup. I think that tools like Google, Doc, what we were just talking about a little bit ago before we got on air, and also Google Hangouts. A lot of startups, in fact, the one that I've been at here is actually, we have a very distributed workforce, folks that work remotely all over the world, and we collaborate through Google Hangouts. We collaborate through Google Docs that we're able to edit and change in real time. We use tools like Slack, which enable us to kind of, even though we're not working in the same office, enables us to still be effective at, pushing the business forward. And, if you look at Chicago specifically, you have all of these new startups coming up. You've got, Avant, Raise.com, Uptake. These guys are hiring 200-300 people a year. And these are technology platforms, they're SaaS platforms and mobile platforms that need a lot of engineers. And there's a finite amount of engineers out there. And so the ability to hire folks that might not necessarily even be in Chicago and still effectively execute is something I think that technology is really enabling startups to tap into.
So it's really kind of expanding the labor pool.
Yeah.
Without, again, like anybody having to move.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do you think it's going to get to the point where you think of like a Silicon Valley or even some of the other technology hubs? I mean, I think of like Austin, which I know isn't a huge technology hub, but it's definitely kind of got a lot of cool young people doing really neat stuff.
Yeah.
Do you think that at some point that none of that will matter? Like, we'll just work wherever we are?
Yeah, and what's interesting is that I think that, people talk a lot about this. I talk about it. I think there's some exciting components to having a totally work-from-home kind of organization. But I do see some challenges in people being, working remotely successfully over a long period of time. If you look in the Valley, most of those companies require people to be in their office. Google has created such a extravagant office space that enables you to literally, other than sleep at home, you can do everything from your dry cleaning to getting massages to getting your nails done.
That's important for me. So
it's important. You're a well-kept man, Deepak.
Well, yeah. There's nothing wrong with being pretty, all right?
But I think that, so why are they doing that? Right? Like, they're this cutting edge company, but they don't necessarily have a large work from home kind of a workforce, and they're building some of those cutting edge software out there. So I think that, we could continue to see that, but I think that it's not going to happen tomorrow,
Well, what do you think? So why do these companies want people to come and work in the office? I mean, we've even seen this like with Yahoo, calling their people back into the office after having, more of a distributed workforce.
Yeah.
I know I have my opinions, but like, what do you think are some of the challenges of having, like, what are the downsides to this distributed workforce? I mean, the commute's awesome,
but
what's the negative?
Yeah, productivity, collaborating, getting on a whiteboard and kind of figuring different problems out, just building a culture. I think that those are things that can be challenging. I think for smaller startups where you just have to do it, to stay alive and to be competitive and I think it's something that's helpful. But I have also seen, some challenges with that kind of, as you scale. So
I remember having a mentor tell me early on that the way you create culture, and right, everybody's got their own definition, but one of the ways you create culture is you get people to have shared emotional experiences together.
Mm-hmm.
Even if that emotional experience is everybody goes out and has a beer or goes bowling or, has a sales meeting where everybody gets, fired up. And I guess that's pretty hard to do when everybody is just kind of calling in from around the country, even around the world.
Well, you know, and I had to do that in my most recent startup, and I had to, I had worked with engineers all over the world. We had a lot of engineers in Western Europe, South America, Canada, Idaho. And I'm just joking with that last one.
the exotic climate of Idaho.
Yeah, but I think that you know, I had to get creative. It was really kind of basing on that improv kind of mentality of, you know, we go where the talent is. That was our kind of our mantra. But we also, so we had to build up that infrastructure to support the fact that we're embracing this distributed workforce. So we, you know, we had weekly kind of on-air live podcasts where I would interview a different engineer, and we would talk about what they like to do, what are the problems they're trying to solve, who do they work with, who do they want to work with in the organization, what's their, you know, I would play their theme song before we would interview them, and so we had a 30 seconds of their favorite song. And then we were on Slack, so they would post pictures and stuff. So we were really trying to help kind of have people stay connected, because especially as an engineer, you can just be focusing on your work, your code, and a lot of times they would like to connect with other people in the organization, and they just don't have the ability to do that. And so I was trying to help bring those folks together. And then, of course, you fly them in. You have, you know, quarterly, in-person meetings. The CEO might fly to Europe and have a summit there, you know, and just highlight people and really kind of try to stay engaged, through Slack and doing hangouts maybe, that would just be kind of maybe once a week at 10 o'clock in the morning. We have a coffee clutch where people could just join it and, just talk.
Cool.
And the rule would be you couldn't talk about work during that.
Right. It's so interesting, because I think that we got really excited. I mean, I think we're actually seeing both of these trends happen at the same time, where there's definitely this excitement of having the distributed workforce and people going, gosh, I can just work from home and it frees up all this flexibility and, you know, work-life balance, all these great things. But I think that we're also seeing people at the same time, and I've been doing a lot of research on this for my own work lately, where a lot of people think like millennials and the younger workforce that's coming up is completely digital, and they just want to basically, you know, work in their own little pods and stuff. But they're like the ones who are starting to push and go, no, I want to connect with human beings.
Yeah.
Sometimes they don't feel comfortable with it because they have kind of grown up in an environment with just a lot of screens.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I think you and I would both agree that having a conversation with someone in person, whether it's having a beer with somebody, whether it's talking not about work, or just sitting there, as you said, with the whiteboard and hashing ideas out,
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason, it's so much more impactful.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think would be the ideal situation?
Yeah.
Is there one? Does it depend on the organization and what they're trying to do, the culture? I mean, is there a culture that works where it's completely distributed and that's okay?
There are tech companies out there specifically that do have a 100% remote workforce, and I can't peel back the curtain and see, you know, is it really going great? I think that it would be good if there was an ability for companies to allow people the flexibility to maybe a couple days a week work from home. I think it'd be a huge competitive advantage if they could. But then it would be also, I think, something that would work if they were, maybe they had a couple days that they could work from home, but then they need to be in the office the rest of the time. But, you know, I lean towards having everyone working in the same office. For one, you mentioned millennials. I'm a huge fan of working with millennials. I'm a Gen Xer. I think that my generation was kind of we always did exactly what we were told. We didn't question authority, and we worked really hard. I see millennials being like, why do I need to do that? You know, I want to do this over here, and I want more responsibility. And, you know, I think that they push the envelope, and they are really changing the dynamic of work based on the fact that they are digital natives who have the ability to get information and learn in ways that, you know, we, you know, I had Encyclopedia Britannicas, you know,
right.
I had to go look at microfilm at the University of Iowa to put together one of my thesis papers, you know, because there was no freaking internet.
Right.
You know, and so
you didn't just use Wikipedia?
No, I couldn't do that, you know? And so I think that there is differences in the generational side of things. But the millennials I've worked with, when they didn't have a leader in place that they could help provide them with guidance, they were desperate for it. They wanted it. They wanted to work with someone. I think that, you know, they're very open to working in an office and being part of a physical team. But I think they also could have the ability and the maturity to work remotely at least some of the time. So I think in a perfect world, it'd be great to have a mix of both.
Mix of both. I think that's really interesting, something you just said there, where they really crave the leadership. And I don't think that's the millennial generation. I just think that's young people in general, right? Yeah. Every generation, as smart and as savvy as kind of the average 26-year-old is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is something I always talk about when I work with organizations and we're doing kind of social media stuff, training, workshops, keynotes, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's always this assumption that young people just get the technology, they get social media, for example, in and out. And the answer is absolutely, they are those digital natives. But the reality is, they don't have any business experience.
Right.
Right? They don't have communication experience. And then so you look at the flip side, somebody who's 55 might not feel real, they might not be very versed with social media, but they get how to lead, how to engage, how to influence. If they're, let's say it's a salesperson, like, they get how to actually work with a prospect. Right. And it's interesting. Like, I think one of the best things organizations can do is put those two groups together and then find ways to make them acknowledge the value that each brings.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And that's, it can be hard to do, I think.
Oh, it's incredible. It can be very hard to do. But, you know, I think, again, if you have that foundation that you set up, and you have ways to kind of assess people and what they're doing. If they're working from home a couple days a week and they're working in the office and they're getting done, then they should absolutely be able to do it. You know, let's treat people like the adults that they are until we're given a reason to maybe not. And then
right.
there's a time where maybe they need to either be brought back into the office 100% of the time, or maybe it's just not the right fit.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting you say that, because I just was on the East Coast earlier this week on the way home, finished a book called The Human Side of Enterprise, which was written by this guy named Douglas, I think it's MacArthur or something. It's a Mac name. McGregor, Douglas McGregor. And this was written in the 60s, like the 50s and 60s. And he talks about Theory X and Theory Y. And Theory X is a control theory.
Mm-hmm.
And Theory Y is exactly what you said. Just assume people are smart. Assume people want to be successful and do well,
mm-hmm.
and enable them to do well, as opposed to trying to just damper down all of their initiative.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that that whole process starts with, all right, you've assessed them, you've interviewed them, you've interviewed them to ensure that they are aligned with the values of the company and that they're a good culture fit. And then, so you've brought them in the organization, so now it's time to trust them and trust your process and allow them to do what they need to do to get work done.
Exactly. In fact, I'm going to use that point to go back to improv, because I wanted to ask you more about it.
Oh.
That idea of trust, right? Because one of the biggest things you need to do is be able to trust the people that you're working with, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's the guy who's helping you code or the person who's up on stage helping you do a scene. For you personally, so you've been doing improv for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
What has been the biggest learning for you about who you are as a person? Like, what has improv done for you to help you grow?
Oh, man. I think that, you know, just my gut, you know, reaction to that is you can't feed yourself or be housed through improv. It is not something, it
okay.
won't feed you, and it won't give you shelter or clothes or a roof over your head. You know, I moved here 16 years ago to become a famous improviser and go to Second City and go to Saturday Night Live. And I learned real quick that to do that, I would have to make some tremendous sacrifice over a very long period of time to make that happen. And I, after already just doing that through college, I just wasn't really necessarily prepared to do that. But it took me about probably 6 or 7 years after being here to finally accept the fact that I wasn't going to become famous, and that was okay. You know, I think that there were times where when I told people I was an improviser, if they said to me, "Oh, well, that's a nice hobby," I would get really ticked off about it. I'd be like, "No, it's not a hobby. This is what I want to do with my life. This is my calling," you know? And I think over time I was like, I started to see the benefits of it outside of just this giant idea that half of the guys moving to Chicago, you know, thousands of people move here every year to become famous improvisers and a sliver of a fraction of them actually make it. And those that do make it work their asses off, have nothing, live on people's couches, to get to that point, you know.
Well, and it's funny you said that, because when you're like, you can't, you know, make it as an improviser, and I'm starting to go through all the very successful actors and actresses we know that got their start, you know, many of them here in Chicago. And then I'm like, wait, but none of them actually are famous for improvising, right? They're famous because they're movie actors or
yes.
television actresses or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, they use improv in what they do, right?
Sure.
And it's a tool to them. But, you know, I think that I have reaped so much bounty from being an improviser, my day-to-day life. Well, I think that just like what we've been talking about, the ability to collaborate with people and come at a problem in a collaborative, positive manner. The camaraderie. I've been improvising with the same improv team for almost 12 years now, and these are
that,
guys.
Mustang
Repair. Yeah,
yeah.
And I mean, you know, we're a family. You know, we've been through a lot of things together, and when we get together to improvise, it's just fantastic. And no matter how crappy my day might be, when I go to a show, and I have shows on Friday nights. I'm exhausted. I've been busting my ass all day. And there are lots of times where I'm like, God, I can't believe I have to go do a show tonight. I get to the theater. I have my first beer. And I get on stage. I'm making people laugh. I get off that stage. And I'm like, what the hell was I thinking that I didn't want to do this? Because this was the best thing that's happened to me this week. And it just fills you with a lot of joy. At creating something, you know? I mean, you know, especially if you're working in the corporate environment, there are times there's just not a lot of ability to be creative. And, you know, I think that having a creative outlet like that has been something that has kept me sane over the years and, you know, made me stronger as a person and enabled me to kind of overcome just the challenges of, you know, working in gravity.
Gotcha. I love it. So I'm going to totally switch topics in a second, but I'm going to do our station identification because I totally forgot. I mean, that's how good our conversation is. I totally forgot to do this.
All right.
So you are listening in to Beer, Beats, and Business. I am your host, D-Fish. If you want to reach out to me, please shoot me a tweet at DFishRockstar. In fact, if you want to talk to me, why not tweet me right now? But as I say, if you're driving, please do not tweet. And also, make sure that you subscribe to get access to all of our fantastic episodes. We got a lot of great guests coming up. And today, in fact, my great guest is Mike Dwyer. He is an expert in the overlap of technology and attracting and retaining talent. And he's also a fixture in the improv scene here in Chicago. And by the way, Mike, what is the best way for people to connect with you and find out more?
Well, you can get me on Twitter at Cruiter, C-R-U-I-T-E-R. And then, of course, I'm on LinkedIn, and I think if you Google my name, I am the number one. My LinkedIn profile is one of the top one or two searches that comes up.
Well, that's because there's not as many Mike Dwyers as there are David Fishers.
No.
although I would just Google Mikey Truffles. So
that could work, man. I do love truffles. Gosh. It's damn good.
Nothing like an inside joke, right?
Right.
So here's just a completely random question, and I've really loved the fact that I've gotten to start this podcast with so many people that I know, because even in asking more questions, I find out stuff I didn't know. You are a big jazz fan.
Mm-hmm.
You actually mentioned as one of your favorite albums, one of my favorite jazz albums, Kind of Blue.
Yeah. Yeah.
How awesome is it? How awesome is that album? And why do you like it? That's my question. Why do you like it? I'll tell you why I like it.
You know, when I first started listening to jazz, one of my good friends from college, Garth Kelly, got me turned on to jazz a long time ago. And recently, my wife and I got into records. We bought a record player. And
you sure you're a Gen X and not a millennial hipster?
You know, I have been accused, you know, I'll take it. I'll take that. That's lopping about 15 years off of me. So
you don't have the beard.
I'll take it.
Sorry.
But and so that was one of our first records we got. And so we listened to it all the time. But I mean, I had it as a cassette tape back in the day.
Oh, old school.
Old school cassette tape. And so that's kind of been my, it's always been something that has relaxed me in times of stress. And, you know, it's just, you know, I love playing it like on a rainy day, you know, or when we're making dinner or something like that.
Well, it's interesting that you said it just relaxes you, because I was definitely not a big jazz fan for most of my life. And that was actually one of the first albums I heard where I got it, where it wasn't just jazz is this crazy thing and there's all these weird solos and it doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't know if I could describe the emotional tenor of that album, but it absolutely has one, and it is completely conveyed over the course of the album.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, for me, it's truly just, I just have this memory once, and I don't even know why, but I was just basically laying in bed at night with that thing playing, and I was like, oh my gosh, like I was getting chills.
Yeah. You know, Miles Davis is of course like a master. He also has, you know, albums that are kind of along the lines of what you're talking about, a little bit more avant-garde, that are definitely kind of like, you know, like what's going on here? You know, I don't have the ear for that. But you know, albums like Kind of Blues, Sketches of Spain, you know, these are kind of his albums that are just like masterful. You cannot beat that. And you know, when it comes to, you know, like a nice rainy night.
Dun, dun. Dun, dun. I mean, it's just awesome. Yeah.
Maybe we should perform one of the songs.
No. I think that's I'm going to take our conversation of yes and completely turn on the side and say no buts.
No buts. No, but here's why.
And here's why. You know, there's no bad ideas, but there's definitely ideas that should not be implemented, right?
That's right. Absolutely.
Give everything a fair hearing and be like,
no.
I'm further, you know, we're going to let Miles do that, you know? Oh, that's awesome. I mean, it is such a fun album. It's hard to describe to people who don't like jazz why they should listen to it.
Yeah.
But it's in fact, my fiance, that was one that I know I played for her, and she was like, oh, this is, yeah, I really like this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For a dude, it's like, you play that for a woman, and they're like, oh, my God, he's so sensitive, and he's just, wow, he's very cultured and worldly. Of course, for a long time, it was the only jazz album that I had. But I was like, yeah, man, I mean, this is kind of my kind thing.
Yeah.
What I do.
Yeah. I already use that in Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and just be like, Frank, or if I really wanted to try to go deep, it'd be Sammy Davis.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
You know, I was a big Sammy Davis fan, so I'd be like, oh, yeah, it's kind of loungy, kind of, you know, emotive.
Sure.
It never really worked that well, but I'm not going to blame that one on Sammy or Frank. I think they weren't working with a lot of raw material with me. So
right. So don't put that on them.
No. I'm going to take responsibility for this. So. Mike, I could talk to you for hours, but this sounds like a good place to kind of wrap things up. So I always ask all of my guests the same question as we finish up. But if you could give someone a tip to make today a little better, what would your tip be?
first off, I just want to say fantastic experience today. Love talking to you. I've got three blog ideas just from our conversation, so I wanted to thank you for that.
Absolutely.
And I've thought about this question, and especially being in the startup space, there's a lot of days where you can just be beat down and just feel like you got your ass kicked, and you just don't think you're going to have the energy, you know. And every morning, just remember that when you wake up, it's a new day, and that day is a unwritten book, you know, unwritten page in a book, and you get to write it. And I think that, you know, just keep that in mind when you're slogging through, that, you know, it might be a tough day, but the next day is new, it's been unwritten, and you have the opportunity to make it great. And so that's kind of, I guess, my thought for the day. That's what keeps me going.
I love it. Every morning you get to push the reset button.
Yeah.
You get to remake it exactly as you want, or at least try.
Yes. Yes.
I love it. I love it. Mike, thanks for joining me today.
D Fish, love you lots, bud. Take care, and thanks again.
Thanks for stopping by today and listening in. You can find show notes and links for this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. You can also share this episode through social media and leave reviews through iTunes or any of your favorite podcasting services. If you have feedback, leave D Fish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar. And of course, we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.
I'm D Fish. Thanks for joining us today.
Again, you and I, D Fish, Vulcan mind meld happening right now, because I couldn't agree with you more.
Well, you know, I try to just bring on guests that do agree with me. I want people to make me feel good about myself and my own thoughts. You know, I just want people who agree with me.
It's your world. We just live in it, man.